Blog Talk Radio.
The cost left my heart broken, so I had it closed for repair. Wandering in my desert, your oasis appears. You're like a long, cool drink of water. I'm thirsty, that's clear when I taste you. I know you, I know you, I do. So can you feel it? Tell me I need to know.
Hey everybody, it's Mark Rawson, and I'd like to welcome you to Spiritual Connections Radio. As you know, every month we have our show that runs on the third Tuesday of every month. I have to actually go look that up because I can never remember. And this is called the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour. And it's a show about men and their spiritual journeys, and me and my friend Mike put this together. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mark.
Good to have you on.
Yeah, good to be here.
So me and Mike put this together, and we thought it'd be really great to have a show that's dedicated to men because, you know, it's very interesting that for men in the spiritual area, we're kind of a rare breed. I think there's more men awakening and everything like that, but you know, for a lot of us men that are in the spiritual industry and doing different things like learning or teaching or whatever like that, you know, it's not uncommon for us to go to conferences with 500 women. So very interesting numbers. But, you know, I can even say, you know, for me, it's almost been 4 years since I, quote, unquote, been on my journey. And, you know, when I first started, there was maybe one or two guys in a class, if you were lucky. Now, you know, when I go to some of the places, there's more. So it's just amazing to see that more men are coming into their spirituality. I think it's a little bit different. You know, when I talk about this, I talk about guys really engaging and learning something spiritually. I think for a very, very long time, I know a lot of people, a lot of men will tell you that they've always had that gut feeling. A lot of men actually base a lot of their business on intuition, even though they won't call it that. You know, and, you know, I think, you know, I've kind of talked about this during some of my own interviews and on some of the other, you know, other shows that I've done where I've talked about the fact that, you know, when I was working on my Harvard business certification, I had done some reading for part of the program that involved Harvard Press. And there was some very interesting articles that I read that a number of the top worldwide CEOs of companies, executives that run billion-dollar companies, actually use their intuition to make major decisions involving millions of employees or billions of dollars of contract. And, you know, I thought that was interesting, mostly because they were willing to admit it. So, you know, I think it's kind of out there. I think, you know, a lot of it happens, but no one's really been able to put their finger on it. And I think more guys are coming into it. So with that, we like to have a show like this where we can bring in somebody and kind of talk about, you know, what their journey's like. So I'm actually going to go promote this out on a whole bunch of Facebook groups and hand this over to Mike for now. Mike, why don't you go ahead and say hello and introduce our great guest for tonight.
Okay. Welcome to the show, everyone. Tonight we have Gary Gallant. Did I say your last name properly, Gary?
Yes, you did, Mike.
Okay. Just wanted to check. So Gary is the director and lead hypnotherapist at Hype for Life Incorporated, Improving Your Life Through Hypnotherapy. It's a company that offers services using hypnosis, positive visualization, and guided imagery to individuals and groups. And he specializes in smoking cessation, weight control, stress management, elimination of fears and phobias, hypnosis for children, improving sports, artistic, and academic performance, anger management, past life regression therapy, Reiki, healing touch, and psychic mediumship. And, wow, that's a great long list of different things there, Gary.
My business card is on an 8x10.
Okay. Well, with that, Gary, we'd like to welcome you to the show.
Okay, thanks, Mark and Mike.
Oh, no problem. And
welcome.
Thank you. And this is new. This is all new to me. So this is just another thing that that I'm expanding my knowledge base on, and that's the purpose of living, I think, just to keep growing and learning.
I'll hit you with the standard question we normally ask everybody, and that is, you know, were you born gifted, or were you like me? Did you come into it later in life?
That's a good question, and a lot of people ask that. At 5 years old, I went into we moved into a house, and I had my own bedroom for the first time. I was just 64. My birthday just passed, so this is going back 59 years ago, I guess. And I was going to sleep in my bed in my own room for the first time, and I kind of had a feeling that there was someone standing there. And I opened my eyes, and there was a man with a beard and a hat in a suit standing at the foot of my bed. He wasn't threatening, but I saw him there, and as any five-year-old would, I screamed at the top of my lungs. My father and mother came running in, and he, after doing this for like four nights in a row, my father started getting a little pissed and said, go in the closet, we'll sleep with the lights on, there's nobody here, you're having a dream. And I proceeded to go to bed every night with a pillow over my head, denying the fact that I kept seeing this man. And eventually I stopped, and now I realized that at that point I was veiling myself over, and the openness to it was stopped. But I do believe everybody's psychic, and everybody denies it.
Excellent. Did you have a question, Mike?
Yeah. So I was wondering if you could tell us more about a little bit about some of the things that you offer at your business, and in with that, if you could explain to us a little bit how you've merged some of more of the metaphysical in with some of the things that you do. Like,
sure.
You know, in the beginning, did you do more of it on a technical spectrum, and then as you went along throughout the years, did you notice that you actually felt more intuition working with you, and so on and so forth?
Yep. The evolution of the process was very interesting. I was a 3-pack-a-day cigarette smoker 33 years ago, and I tried to quit, and I couldn't when my son was wanting to know why he didn't have any grandfathers, and they both died of smoking-related illness. So I wanted to quit smoking, and I couldn't, and I finally, through synchronicities, but at the time I looked at them as three separate coincidences. I didn't believe in synchronicity, and I was a Darwinist. And although I was born Jewish, I believed in the tradition and the history, but I was pretty much an atheist. And I believed that human beings were lucky to be born. We could have been cockroaches, but basically we were born very lucky in the United States. And so I really didn't believe in any higher power. And synchronicities pointed me to go to a hypnotist, and I went to, and I quit smoking 3 packs a day to one-shot deal, never smoked again. And that's been like I said, 33 years ago. And at that point, I knew I would be doing hypnosis, but I didn't know how it was going to turn out. And eventually, long story short, I became a teacher. I went and I finished my master's. And after I got going back to school to get my master's, I saw an ad in the paper to learn to be a hypnotist, and that was in 1998. And I went back to school, I learned hypnosis, I knew it worked because it worked for me. I quit smoking, and I believed in the power of it, but I believed in behavioral change, quitting smoking, weight management, behavioral change, repressed memories, all the standard, just real-world experiences that can be helped with hypnosis, and it worked very well. And then other coincidences started happening all at the same time, and it was all wrapping around past life regressions. And I didn't believe in it. And I would go to a workshop for hypnosis, you know, a convention for CEUs, and the people, they were all telling me about Many Lives, Many Masters. And I said, well, what's that book? And, oh, I can't believe you didn't read it. And I said, well, what's it about? Past life regression. And I rolled my eyes, and I said, bunch of New Age garbage. And I didn't believe in it. I didn't believe in psychics. I didn't believe in life after death or the continuation of consciousness. And then three different people, and the same way I found a hypnotist with three different people in three different parts of my life, now we look at it as a synchronicity, I looked at coincidence. They all mentioned Many Lives, Many Masters. I didn't believe in it. I wanted to prove, one of the workshops I went to was for pain management, and I wanted to prove it to myself that it worked, so I went to my dentist. I needed a root canal. And I said, I want to have a root canal without Novocaine. And he kind of flipped out and said, nah, you really want to have Novocaine. And I said, well, I just took the course in pain management and hypnosis. And I said, if I fill up the needle and if I start to scream, just jab me with it. And it ended up that I went through a root canal where, you know, you drill through the root of your tooth and rip your nerve out. And I didn't have Novocaine. And I had made a CD or a cassette tape for myself. And then the dentist said, wow, I was very impressed with that. You handled that. It was great. He said, you must have read Many Lives, Many Masters. And I said, are you too? Come on, give me a break. And so that was the third synchronicity. That was, you know, and I didn't realize it until that weekend after that root canal. I went to see my daughter in college in Virginia. And my wife and I went into a bookstore, and I go to the New Age section looking for hypnosis books, and I saw a hypnosis book that I wanted to read, and all the other psychic stuff, Sylvia Brown books, I ignored. But when I pulled the hypnosis book out, along with it came another book, and Many Lives, Many Masters literally fell in my hand, dropped in my hand, and I said, that's the book they've all been talking about. And I kind of looked up in the air, not believing in talking to anybody, but more basically out of the weirdness of the coincidences, and I read it. And I'm also, on my pedigree that you read there, I'm also a special ed high school teacher. I'm going to be retiring in a year and a half. And the synchronicities there that got me that job and everything started ringing in my ears, that I have to look at these coincidences that drove me down a path as a synchronicity. And then when I read Many Lives, Many Masters, I said, well, that's it. That was 2003. And more synchronicities kept popping constantly, all about Many Lives, Many Masters. And then I found out that Brian Weiss was going to be doing a week workshop for therapists. At that point, I was a hypnotherapist in Rhinebeck, New York at Omega. And I signed up for it in 2003, and my chakras were, I didn't have chakras. I mean, they were walled over, cemented, and coated in steel. So I didn't believe in any of this. It was like chakra, krakra, whatever the hell you're talking about, Reiki, Shmeiki, New Agey stuff. But then I'm saying I read this book, and the reason why that book is so life-altering is because Brian had everything to lose by writing it. He was the head of the psychiatric department in Mount Sinai, Miami. He had all kinds of degrees. He was very progressive, and he could have been basically laughed out of the AMA for talking about past life regression therapy as a psychiatrist. And I read the book with different eyes because at that point I believed in him. And Mark, the way you're gearing your show towards men, because basically, without generalizing, I think as a man you say to yourself, prove it to me. If you convince me that there's truth here, that I can get past my cynicism and just be a healthy cynic, then I'll go a little bit and I'll listen to what you have to say. And when I went there, I mean, they were Reiki masters from Costa Rica and South America. I met people from Scotland who flew in from Japan. The week was insane. And I had cranial sacral Reiki. I was like a walking little bundle of chakra energy. It got me going down the path. And from there, I met two people that were going to the Institute for Spiritual Development, which is a metaphysical spiritualist church in Sparta, and they were doing psychic development classes. So I said, all right, you got me going. And I went there, and before I know it, now I'm considering myself as a spiritualist, like the NSU in England. And then it's been ongoing since then. One thing leads to another. So I take a psychic development class, which as you're doing psychometry with someone, all of a sudden spirit is talking to you. And the next thing I know, the people that are running it are telling me that I'm not a psychic, I'm a medium. And I said, I don't know whether I'm a medium, small, or large, whatever the hell I am, this is very weird. And then they said, you're going to stop looking at it as weird, and you're going to start looking at it as real. And that's that very long hour spiel probably is where I am now.
Wow. So, just to give everybody an explanation for the men that are listening, what is the difference between a psychic and a medium?
Well, in the United States, people say psychic mediums. That's redundant. There is psychics, which is reading the energy of a person that you're standing with, or seeing auras, but dealing with the person. A medium, by necessity, has to be psychic because you're reading other energies other than coming in from the five senses. A medium connects with energies of those loved ones that have passed in spirit, because and the belief in reincarnation and the belief that your consciousness continues is probably a prerequisite for this belief system. So if you believe that consciousness continues, and then when your body dies, your soul lifts out and it's vibrating at an extremely higher rate, but still you're aware of what's going on around your family, and you have the ability to communicate. The person, a medium, is the person that you can communicate through to give messages and validations to their loved ones that are still living. So the difference between psychic and mediumship is both are psychic, meaning picking up energies that other than the five senses. But a medium is one that not only connects with the energy of the person, but also from the energies of discarnate people, that and their consciousness is still intact. I hope I answered that question.
Oh, yeah. So... we're definitely going to want to find out more about what type of training you did for mediumship and what type of work you've done now in the spiritual area. But before we go to that, let's talk about hypnosis for a minute. What
sure.
do you think is the biggest misconception about hypnosis?
Well, if you watch television and watch the movies and you have some assumptions about hypnosis. And unfortunately, people come in that have been hypnotized the first time, and they're kind of disappointed with the experience because of the hype that comes into hypnosis, the altered state of consciousness. They feel like they're like going, who knows, like on an acid trip or something. And it's absolutely nothing like that. It's wonderfully relaxing. The way it feels like, and I think the experience that everybody can relate to, is falling asleep watching television. I use that as an analogy. Mm-hmm. If you know that experience, you're sitting there, you're watching the TV, you start feeling your eyes become heavy, you start to nod off, you know that you're falling asleep, but you're still aware that you're not in bed and you're watching television, and your eyes droop and you feel that wonderful buzzy, heavy quality. And you say to yourself, I should shut off the stupid TV and go to bed, and you know what? It's been a long day. I just want to sit here and just relax for a second. And the next thing you know, you're sleeping. that 5-minute period when you are realizing you're falling asleep, but you know you're not asleep yet, to the point where you are asleep, and it's about 5 minutes, your brain goes from beta wave activity to alpha brainwave activity. That 5 minutes that you go through naturally is a natural state of hypnosis. What's the difference is that a hypnotist will talk you into that state, and I believe that the reason why you don't go to sleep is because your attention is listening to what he's saying, but everything else is basically asleep. Your senses are shutting down as if you were sleeping, but your hearing is still there, and you're hearing, and then you actually become more aware of what's happening, more aware of yourself. Now, if you are on that precipice between sleep and awake, and you're producing alpha brainwave activities, that's when your subconscious is easily accessible by the hypnotist. So if I was doing repressed memories, when the person's deeply hypnotized, we can go back in time. And the other thing that I use with clients talking about hypnosis, I'll say, what did you have for dinner last night? And if anybody's listening, you can go through this. I can do this with you guys right now. Think about what you had for dinner last night. And you might say a hamburger, or you had steak or whatever. And the memory comes to you relatively quickly, because that's in your short-term memory. By tomorrow, it's going to be into your long-term memory, and it's almost saved on your brain's computer, on your hard drive, as a Word document for yesterday. If I ask you what you had for dinner 3 weeks ago on Tuesday on September 19th, I would think that it would be impossible for you to remember. But in fact, you can go back to some other time in that day and remember everything that you did on that day, because that's stored in your long-term memory, accessible through your subconscious, which is accessible through when your brain is producing alpha brainwave activity. And that's just by regressing back there. Now, with past life regression, it's the same type of regression, only you're going back to a past life as opposed to what you had for dinner last month.
Wow. So, you know, if you look at using hypnosis to have someone quit smoking, it seems to be very successful for that.
Absolutely.
The question I would have is there something in an individual that would make it that the hypnosis would not clear that habit?
Oh, yeah. It's just like anything else. There's nothing that's 100% certain. If there are so many variables with hypnosis, if the person is, for example, I'll get a phone call from a woman. My husband wants to quit smoking. And I say this to every woman that calls for her husband. I said, no disrespect intended, but why am I speaking to you and not to him? Well, he really doesn't really think that he can do it, or he really doesn't want to, or I want him to do it. And I said, save your time and your money, give him my telephone number, and when he's ready to quit, call me. Because a smoker will never quit unless they realize the need. In my case, it was my 7-year-old son who wanted to know how come both of his granddaddies were dead. And I had to explain that they both smoked. And that realization hit me right between the eyes, right in my third eye. And I went back to when I would argue with my father that smoking was going to kill him, because I started smoking after my father died of metastasized lung cancer, like an idiot. But yet it got me on the path that I am now. So I started smoking after my father died of lung cancer because the smell of the tobacco on my fingers reminded me of him, which is the most bizarrely stupid reason to start smoking. But then many years later, when my son wants to know why his grandfather died, and I have to explain because he's doing the same habit that I was doing, reality check hit me, and I said, I have to quit, and I couldn't for a year. And then three synchronicities popped. and I went to this hypnotist, and I walked out, and I never smoked anymore. And that really is what changed my whole life. But to the effectiveness of hypnosis, which I think your question was, there are many variables. The relationship that I have with my client, if that person isn't comfortable with me, they're going to be thinking of the fact that they're uncomfortable with me for whatever reason and not allow themselves to go into hypnosis, because every person that I've ever hypnotized or any hypnotist has hypnotized is complimenting the hypnotist in a way by saying, I trust you, I'm going to close my eyes, I'm going to let my defenses down. Because when you think about what hypnosis does and the kind of misconceptions about that I'm controlling a person, if you don't really have trust and faith in a hypnotist, you're going to let them play with your mind. So the variations that can be, the variables that can make a person able to be hypnotized, I think the two most important is the desire to be hypnotized for a specific reason, and there's a bell-shaped curve of ability for hypnosis. That and the rapport and the relationship that you have with from the hypnotherapist and the client, the relationship has to be comfortable and good and productive and value placed in it by the client. The hypnotist has to be skilled enough to know what he's doing. And then the other thing that's very important is the ability to be hypnotized is a bell-shaped statistical curve. You have 10% of the population that is very difficult to hypnotize, usually because of control issues. They don't like to give up control. Then you have 80% of the population that's reasonably easy to hypnotize to, a little difficult. And then you have 10% of the population on the opposite end, where that person can be hypnotized literally with a snap of a finger. And those are the ones that you see up on stage acting particularly crazy. But it's called an instant induction. The standard issue is progressive relaxation to inducing someone into hypnosis, where you progressively relax the muscles of the body. But an instant induction would be sometimes you see evangelical Christians when they're doing a healing and they hit someone in their forehead, in their third eye, and then they fall backwards. That if they are really doing an instant induction, and you hit the person's third eye or snap the finger, and because they so want to be hypnotized, they drop into it, and that's what you see when you see a hypnotist on stage snap their fingers and say sleep, because the person wants it so bad.
Got it. Mm-hmm. So I would assume that, you know, if I was one of those people that could instantaneously be put under that quickly, that if, you know, we did the normal Las Vegas thing that you want me to cluck like a chicken, that if I don't want to cluck like a chicken, even in that state, I assume that I would have the ability to stop it.
Yes. If you are in that 90% of the population that is from the opposite end, very, very difficult to hypnotize, to average, if you go on stage, that stage hypnotist is skilled enough to know to pull out the 10% of the population that's very easily hypnotized, and then 10% of that 10, or in other words, 1% of the population, is so deeply hypnotized that they will quack or act silly, but it doesn't go against their own value system. So in other words, and I tell women there that if you have two women, one is basically a very conservative, maybe like a nun, let's say, but very, very conservative in her approach towards life. And then you have another one who's a stripper, both equally able to be hypnotized at that same 1% level, that can be hypnotized simply with a snap of a finger, that they both go in to the same level depth of hypnosis. And I told them, I wouldn't say strip, because in that case I would be sued and it would be inappropriate, obviously, and non-professional. But if I said act like a stripper, the stripper who does it normally with no problem would probably go through her dance routine. The conservative woman, because I would be going against her own belief systems and her own moral judgment and her own view of herself, would come out of hypnosis and then probably justifiably smack me in the face, which I would deserve.
let's just take a quick break. We want to let everybody know you're listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. The third Tuesday of every month, we have what's called the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour, a show about men and their spiritual journeys. And we have Gary with us tonight talking about all types of things spiritual. And if you want to find out more about him, you can go to his website at hyp4life.org. And as always, if you want to find out more about this show and other shows, you can go to our website, which is spiritualconnectionsradio.com. We want to announce that we just started a new weekly radio show, which just started yesterday with Heather from New Hampshire, who is doing one called the Animal Mystics Hour, where she's talking about animals, shelters, and rescue, and spiritual totems, and everything. So make sure to tune in every Monday to listen to Heather's show at 8 o'clock. Just an incredible show about animals. So with that, let's get back to the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour. And of course, we have on us with me this evening is my friend Mike. And it's always great to have him on. If you haven't had a chance to experience some of his work or download his music, he actually channels music from angels and does absolutely incredible healing work. And he can do that in person or he can do it across the globe. Mike, go ahead and give out your website.
Oh, thank you, Mark. My website is www.MikeSnyderCC.com. And on there I have my CDs that you can download and also different meditation classes I've played music at that you can download and a lot of other stuff as well.
Yeah, I highly recommend his music. It's not like anything you'll see out there. So definitely check that out. So back to what we were talking about, Gary. Tell us a little bit about, you know, where did you go with your training and who have you trained with and everything after you got past Brian and your past life regression certification?
Okay, after I was certified in 2003 with Brian, the whole process really, there was an awakening within me. And I was, and basically I'm a very curious person, so I need to understand what is around me. And so when I started taking from there, I had, in actuality, I had a mediumship reading. I had a medium who brought my father through during that week with Brian. That's what really made me curious, because it wasn't your father's here and he loves you. It was extremely specific information that no one knew but me. And it wasn't earth-shattering, but it would be what he would say to me to prove to me that he was here. And it blew my mind. So then I went to, again, the Institute for Spiritual Development in Sparta, New Jersey. And I started taking psychic classes there, psychic development classes. And it's a spiritualist church, as I said. And they have psychic development classes, the basic intro, psychometry, the real basic psychic classes. And when I was doing them, I was surprising myself with the accuracy. I didn't think I was psychic, but I thought it was fun. And then I started getting mediumship readings in a psychic class, and that's when the women that were running it, and what you were saying is funny, because usually it's about 25% men to 75% women in everywhere you go in this. So any men that you're listening to this, if you want to meet some women, get into metaphysics, because we're way outnumbered. But I just throw that out there. But when I started, they came up to me and they kind of looked at me kind of like a weird look, like you're a medium. And I said, what are you talking about? Oh, you can talk to dead people. And I said, oh, really? Do I really? And then I started realizing that the images that was coming to me from other than the five senses was really making me curious as far as how this works, because people were crying, people were very, very positively affected by the things I was saying, and I didn't even know what I was saying. I mean, I said, all I'm doing is I'm seeing this, a butcher shop in Brooklyn. Oh, my God, that was my father, and it was shocking me. So then I started taking classes with, back at Omega, with John Holland, who was the first medium that I was working with. And he's not as world-renowned as like John Edwards had been back in the day. But I started going to Boston and taking advanced classes in mediumship with him. And it was kind of heady. I didn't want to feel so full of myself. But, you know, he came over and he was telling me that I had a very good ability. And I'm saying, I didn't really want to hear it because it was kind of weirding me out. And then I realized when the memories came back from when I was 5 years old that I had really stopped myself from, I wouldn't allow myself to get images because it scared me so much. And then it took many years later where I'm saying, okay, I want that, give me that back. Talking to my spirit guides. Now, when you talk to somebody who is just learning this and you start telling them that you have a group of energy creatures, spirit guides, that are around you all the time, that are there for the purpose of helping you get through this to learn the lessons that you chose to learn, that's when the eyebrows go up. Usually it's one eyebrow, usually the right, where I'm talking to somebody and I look at that eyebrow go up. You don't have to be psychic. You say, okay, this person is definitely not getting what I'm throwing out there. But I started taking like three or four workshops with John Holland, who told me to go to Janet Nahovac in New Jersey, who is now, she's my teacher. And now she's going up to Omega too because she's an incredibly gifted medium. But then I also have worked with James Van Prague, who's the executive producer of The Ghost Whisperer on television, and Suzanne Northrup and Brian and Simon from Canada, and there's a college which is very interesting in England called Arthur Findlay College, which in England, spirituality is a very popular organized religion, basically. And there's a college there for psychics, healers, mediums, and tutors from England come over to give us advanced. And I can give you some stories that really make your head spin and prove to people that, you know, if they accept the fact that I'm not lying when I give an example of what happens at some of these workshops, if they say, okay, he's not lying, maybe he's delusional, but if you accept the fact that the experience is there, it really opens your mind and piques your curiosity to continue. So now, right now I'm working with Janet Nahovac, who has a church, a spiritualist church in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey.
Wow. Can you tell everybody and the listeners and everything, I'm sorry, Mike, did you have a question there?
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to comment and say, you know, that's very fascinating listening to your experiences because, you know, both Mark and myself also do sessions with people where we bring through, channeled information. I know for myself, you know, when I bring through information for somebody, a lot of times when I'm going to do a sound healing session for them and they're laying on my healing table, you know, before I start the sound healing session, I'll put my hands in their shoulders and usually have like a four or five minute message that I give them. And it never ceases to amaze me in that moment when I just kind of feel my third eye open and I see like a vision before me, whether, you know, it's a forest or a hallway or whatever the vision I have for the person is. And I just start, you know, reciting all these things for them that relate to their life. You know, and then when I'm all done and I say the very last word, then I feel like my ego brain is back, and I'm just like, oh my God, what did I just say? I don't even know this person. How did I know this information? You know, and usually, you know, when the sessions are over and the person starts talking about it, and they're like, you know, this has been happening in my life, and what you said with that is leading to this, and, you know, and I've been feeling all this, and, you know, part of me is like, wow, I feel like I'm kind of like, you know, spying and taking a peek inside the brain. On the other hand, it's like, wow, like the reaction of how much they feel understood and how enlightening the message felt to them, it felt like, wow, I'm really, you know, doing the work I'm supposed to. So it's amazing how your logical brain and your higher self kind of conflict there, you know, when you just let it loose and bring the message out. And
absolutely.
But, you know, it, again, like you said, some people could get totally freaked out by it. So when I do a session, especially if it's somebody I don't know, you know, I'll ask them ahead of time, hey, are you comfortable, you know, did you want me to give you a message, or you want to start with the music, you know?
Uh-huh.
And sometimes you have to do that if the person, if they don't know they're coming to you specifically for, like, a channeled message or something like that, because, you know, maybe they do have something private and they're like, oh, I don't want this guy to find out, you know?
Absolutely. You know? And that's the other thing. When you first working with people, I've been getting, you know, Teresa Caputo on television, Long Island Medium.
Yep.
She is incredibly gifted, but it's like an assault almost when you know, like there's a cashier and she's giving a mediumship reading, and then this woman is all like sobbing and sad and then has to go back to work. You know, people, one of the things that you learn when you're doing more advanced work as a medium, my belief system, and I always preface everything, by the way, I'll say it again, everything that I say about this is just my opinion, and I think if organized religion could say that this is something that I believe in, and that if it makes sense to you and it resonates with you, then by all means you can believe it or you can not. But, you know, like organized religion tends to shove belief systems down throats and it turns people off. That's what happened with me. Turns people off to the higher power because the word God can have so much political clout and sometimes negative from people's views. And also I've had people that have called me doing devil's work, not mediumship, but because they do hypnosis. Some people have said that I'm doing the work of the devil using hypnosis. And I said, wait, hold on a second. I'm helping people quit smoking. I'm helping children overcome behavioral issues. I'm a special ed high school teacher. I devote my entire life to helping other people. How is the devil involved with that? Because you do hypnosis. And I said, do you even know what hypnosis is? And then they turn their back on me, and they're frightened because of the preconceived ideas that were put into their head at some point when they were younger. Because if you're coming from a point of light, if you're coming from a point of goodness, and you're not out to manipulate people and take advantage of them, and then people still have this view, you know, you have to shrug your shoulders and say, you do the best you can. But I hate the idea of forcing dogma down someone's throat, you know, whether it's my spiritual beliefs or Judaism or Catholicism or Buddhism or whatever. I think everybody really needs to understand and believe themselves. And now I get off my platform. Okay, I'm stepping off my soapbox now.
Hey, Gary, if I was a man that was new to spirituality and I came to you and said, I'm not quite sure, I know I have this great gut feeling about things, I think there might be something there, how do I figure out what works for me as far as, you know, kind of figuring out where I want to go with my spiritual path? What would your recommendation be?
Well, I tell you what, that is the attitude that I have, basically. I know that you mentioned that I'm having an open house. I just moved into a new office. And the house was, the one part of it was built in 1750, so it's got some really very old, cool energy there. But in the open house, I'm going to be doing an intro to hypnosis workshop, which is about 2 hours long, and then I'm going to do gallery readings, and also psychic development experiences. So if someone's curious about their own abilities, whether it's psychic or mediumship, and they want to explore it, the best thing they could do is find a place that's advertising psychic development exercises, a class. Usually metaphysical churches always have psychic development and mediumship development because there's the belief system there. And something as simple as psychometry, they can even go online and research psychic development exercises that you can do with friends. I would avoid things like the Ouija board, which kids use, and you really don't want, by the way, if anybody's listening and they have children, don't let them play with a Ouija board because that's a serious psychic tool, not something to be played with by kids, because kids are very open and there could be some other energies that aren't as coming from the light, so to speak. About sound, Gary.
That's great. That's a good recommendation. So before I go on to my next question, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody about your open house and how they can find out where it is that they're going to be in New Jersey.
Okay, well, and thanks, Mark. My open house is in Netcong, New Jersey, which is right off Route 80 and Route 206 North. The house itself is the Hugh Allen Mansion, and the address is 39 Ledgewood Avenue, Route 183. And it's going to be from 10 in the morning on Saturday the 23rd, from 10 in the morning to 5 in the evening. The open house is going to have a free intro to hypnosis workshop, 2 hours from 12 to 2, where we'll do group hypnosis. Everybody will experience what it's like to feel like to be hypnotized. We're going to do some fun experiences where everybody will understand what it feels like to drop back into hypnosis. So that's mostly geared for hypnotherapy. The discussion on metaphysical topics like past life regression, life between lives, the journey of the soul, those are other workshops that I'm going to be putting on in my office. After the hypnosis workshop at 2, from 2 to 3, I'm in a development circle with some other mediums, and it's going to be me and two other mediums that are going to be there. And kind of like what Teresa does in houses and John Edwards does in gallery readings and in a metaphysical church, we're going to do gallery readings, hopefully bring through some spirits for the people that are sitting there. Also, we're going to be doing psychic development exercises there also, the kind that I was talking about. It's called psychometry, where you take something that belongs to someone else and you hold it in your hand and you just say whatever experience, whatever images come to you, whether they're visual or auditory or feeling. So it's going to be a pretty full day on Saturday the 23rd in my office in Netcong. And you can check out more of it on the website hipforlife.com.
That's great. Congratulations on the new location.
Thanks.
So, you know, one of the things that I thought, and you and I have talked over some Starbucks about this, and I love your way of looking at it because I've worked with hundreds of mediums. So I'm going to kind of, I'll set you up on this one. What is the top three reasons that mediumship is important?
Wow, top three. I think I get a little metaphysical on the answer, and the number one reason is for spirit. It's certainly not to become wealthy or popular, because that's not in it at all. If you understand how mediumship works, it's three people are involved. You have the person who is living here, who's missing a loved one. You have the medium who has an ability to connect with the energy of the loved one that has passed, and you have the spirit that is in the light, who has passed, now is no longer in a body, discarnate, that needs to get information to their loved one, whether it's an apology for the way they treated them over the years or a concern about the direction that that loved one is going or where they stored the safe deposit box key or anything that that spirit energy needs to get across to their loved one. I think of the most important thing for mediumship is to be able to work for that spirit because they have nobody else that can get that information to their loved ones but someone who's attuned to connecting with their energy. The second
yeah.
person would be the person who's living here desperately depressed or saddened by the loss of their loved one for whatever reason. And everybody who passes, you know, is going to be missed. But if I can communicate information the way that woman in 2003 brought my father through, which my father's passing devastated me, and she was able to bring information through to me that beyond a question of doubt in my mind, my father's personality, his existence, his knowledge, who he was still intact because there was no other way she could have told me what she told me. So the light that was in me changed. My feelings, I don't cry at funerals anymore because I know that person who's passed clearly is in still with us, still right there in a much better place, in no pain. I cry for the people that are missing them. And I cry for not having the person to physically hold. But I don't cry for the loss. It's an interesting change in that evolution in the person who's still living here. The third most important person is, I got to say, maybe a little selfishly, me. Because when I'm standing with one foot in the spirit and one foot on earth, and the light that is coming from the person in spirit, I'm touching that, and I'm touching the energy and seeing that aura pop. You can see the light go into that person who is missing and the loved one coming through. You can't help but pick up it becomes addictive, in fact. And by the way, John Holland told me, Gary, you better watch out what you're asking for because you got to realize it becomes addictive. And, Mark, you know it too. When you start going down this path, it does become addictive. You really love it. And you love it because you're touching that purity of energy that you there's no other way to describe it. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I would say for the first one, it's completion of contracts, both for the person that's here and for the person who's passed over. I think the second one is closure for people. And
yep.
for the third one, for me, I think it's proof that there's life after death. And I
yep.
know a lot of people have always questioned it. I said, you know, even with my religious teachings that I had when I was growing up and even with a lot of the spirituality I did, it wasn't until I got the mediumship and past life regression that I got proof that there is life after death and that we do continue on and that we have nothing to fear when we die. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, for a lot of people in the mediumship, it's all about, you know, let me go and get some kind of information or let me go have some fun with this. But, you know, for a lot of people, I think it is about the closure and it is about that final proof of just saying, you know what, there is life after death. And,
absolutely.
I can't believe that we basically knocked out an hour already. Isn't that amazing how quick the show goes?
It flew.
So,
I get it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any closing questions, Mike?
Yeah, just real quick, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about when you deal with elimination of fears and phobias and what that's like.
And surprisingly, it's a very easy thing. The number one fear on the planet is public speaking. And I have a huge amount of client base with people. Now, that's the other thing about hypnosis. It's the only service that I try to eliminate repeat business. Not referrals, because that's where the business comes from. But a perfect hypnotherapist basically eliminates the need for a second visit because he's eliminated the problem in one shot, and that's what I strive for. With public speaking or any other phobia of that way, there is a repressed memory of when it started, and then you have anticipatory anxiety of it coming. So if you know, if you, using public speaking as an example, if you know that you have a phobia, a fear of speaking in public, and that you have to do it, anticipating it, and it could be a month away, you have a month of pure hell because you're anticipating the fear of standing there. Then the anticipatory anxiety of it coming to you, so the day that you're going to have to stand up and present to the moment before you step up, it's a buildup of the anticipation of you not being able to do it, and then you have the self-fulfilling prophecy of, I knew I was going to screw up, and then how could you possibly succeed, stand up there with all this pressure on you? What I do with hypnosis is we go back to the very first time, and it's almost inevitably in elementary school, and being a teacher, I can attest to this, with public speaking, using it as an example, that a child in first kindergarten, first, second grade is abused in front of a group of kids, they will repress the memory, not remember it, but it's still there. And any time the memory gets stimulated as having to go up and publicly speak, that fear comes back from childhood. And I've had police officers, I had one particular, a chief of police in New Jersey, that was up for the top spot, I forget whether it's a captain going for chief, and he had a public speaking phobia. The man was 54 years old. He went back to second grade in Catholic school when the nun was smacking him every time he mispronounced a word. Had no memory of it, but it was there. And then once that comes out of the repressed memory, it's brought up there, I do reframing with it where I change the memory in their mind, and then it's almost an immediate change. And if you go on my web and my blog and go on phobias, I have a whole bunch of anecdotal experiences about that.
Well, thank you, Gary, and thank you, Mike. And as always, Mike, I love having you on the show. And Gary, thanks for coming on. Go ahead and give out your website to everybody again.
Okay, it's www.hipforlife.com, HYP4LIFE.com, and you can check the blog right from the website.
Wow, that's great.
Mark,
so thanks a lot for being on, and I'm going to go ahead and say goodnight to everybody. You've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio, and this is the Men's Spiritual Hour, and tune in every month to hear our new spiritual man talking about his journey, and I guess that's it.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike, Mark, thank you very much. That was a really cool experience.
Oh, no problem. Thanks a lot. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night.
Traveling down the road, I didn't know that I was lost. Tried too many shortcuts, and the cost left my heart broken. So I had it closed for repairs. Wandering in my desert, your oasis refuse. You're like a long, cool drink of water. I'm thirsty, that's clear when I taste you. I know you, I know you, I do. So can you? I need to know.